Thanks for listening to That Great Mank Pod. Please do us a massive favour and subscribe to this podcast. And if you can, leave us a review on iTunes. Both are a massive help, enabling us to promote the people and the great causes we champion to a much bigger audience. If you want to get in touch, give us a follow on Twitter at Great Mank Pod and drop us a DM. Cheers.
You're listening to That Great Mank Pod, Greater Manchester's community podcast. Top one arcade.
And it's only the audio. Forget the forget what we look like.
No dramas, mate.
Yeah, no, you know, it's not going on TikTok. We're not trying to create a following. Our dancing days are over, but yeah, we've done, what's this now? This is number 12 with yourselves. And I think I can honestly say that it's been an eclectic mix of people that we spoke to. Every single one has been great and different in terms of, you know, people's careers, lives, as you'd expect, I suppose, or yeah, maybe what some people wouldn't expect. Had amazing stories, some really powerful stuff, but a lot of humour, as you know, as I know you would expect. Some of it I've had to edit out. I've had to edit more swearing than Dominic Cummings in the, you know. But, you know, it's kept me busy and improved my skills.
Good effort.
You move into the BBC newsroom next call. They couldn't cope yesterday, could they?
Oh, mate, it was funny. It was funny. But, yeah, no, they've been really good, mate. And, you know, in terms of a quick background, you know, Mank Spirit are ultimately a mental health charity, but we use whatever ways we can to try and get people to talk about mental health and mental well-being. And especially, I mean, speaking as all blokes of a certain vintage, getting blokes to talk about that, about mental health, is really, really difficult. And the whole aim of this ultimately is, if we get one person, one veteran or one someone who served in the police force or the fire service to go, I like the idea of Trafford Veterans, and I either want to go in there and have a laugh and find something to do in my time, or, you know, something a bit more than that. And they go in there and then that's job done for us. Yeah. Obviously not everyone thinks like that, but, you know, we put a lot of value on what you guys have done and are still doing. And I think it's fair to say that some parts of society don't. So we're looking to kind of change that and always have this thing that, you know, how many people do we walk past in the street and you don't give them a second glance, and they may have done amazing things or just done things that you would never do. So it's about that as well, which is like getting these stories out. So
brilliant.
Can you tell us who you are and a bit about your background, where you grew up, what kind of moved you towards joining the army? Like you said, usually it's because it's a choice between that or going to prison.
So I'm Lee Ward, and I grew up in Bolton originally. And from an early age, my old man, many, many years ago, he used to go to, like, you know, fairs and things like that, or open days. There was loads of open days growing up as a kid. But yeah, my dad, well before he'd met my mum and everything else, had served, but he only done a couple of years. And then he was in the territorials for a long time. So right, growing up as a kid, we'd go to all these, he'd take me to all these, like, you know, like open days. And I was fixated on it, on anything to do with the army, really. It was, yeah, it was sort of, my dad sort of, not pushed it on me, but do you know what I mean? He sort of introduced it to me. So I was like, you know, I was always one of them kids who had gone on an assault course. And do you know what I mean? Grab the biggest weapon on the weapon stand and just be like, and it grew from there, really. Obviously, my mum and dad split up. I moved around as a kid. Never, not, because it did affect me, but not in a bad way, if you know what I mean. There's my wife behind me just changing. Sorry. sort of washing out.
Hey, mate, life goes on.
I know. So at one point, I remember my stepdad, when my mum remarried, saying, you're not joining up. It's the easy way out. And I thought, what does he mean, easy way out? I'm probably going up, because I'm at 48 now. Years and years ago, I think the army was like, not a get out of jail free card sort of thing, weren't it? Mm-hmm. You know, anyone can join the army. And he said to me, you know, you're not going in, basically. So anyway, my mum split with my stepdad, and, you know, she moved on to someone else, but not in a, I don't mean that in a, do you know what I mean? Met someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
I went through all that, like, teenage years of, I went from, obviously, leaving school, I went to college, and I had, like, all various things I wanted to try. And it was the army, and I did 3 years at college, but I still couldn't pass my maths. I've been no good at maths, and I was fixated on becoming a Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineer armourer. So I did my maths again part-time, and I worked in a civvy job. And my mum said to me, I was like about 19, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to finish this, and then I'll, you know, what, I'll join up. Anyway, she said, well, next time you're off work, you know, otherwise you'll end up, you know, spending the rest of your life in this rubbish job you don't want,
yeah,
and not doing anything. So my mum sort of, you know, at 19, gave me a kick up the backside. So I went to the army careers, did my test, but unfortunately I didn't score high enough for the remit. But one of the customers that I used to speak to at work said, look, if you don't join the remit, go in the Royal Logistic Corps. So once it come up on my test, that's what I did. And then I served my 24 years in the Royal Logistic Corps. As many people think, the army's just your lads on the front line, aren't they? And don't get me wrong, they do a great job, the infantry. Absolute great job. But it's all about, what do you do when you get out? So it was drummed into me, like, get a trade. So I joined the Royal Logistic Corps. I became a supply specialist, or a supplier. So, I was in sort of logistics, making sure I learned all about the supply chain management. However, I have had a various career, because I got fixated going through training. So I was 20 when I joined up, and I got fixated on my training instructors. And I was like, well, I'd love to be one of them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Shout out to everyone.
Yeah, you sort of like...
get away with it.
But the thing is with him... And I've only just learnt this, because I'll go back to this. Last 6 months, I've been seeing a therapist through Trafford Vets, but I'll come on to that later on.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I fancy it. I wouldn't mind a crack at this. So obviously, my basic training started on the 21st of January, 96. I passed out on the 31st of March, 96. So that was my 10 weeks basic training.
Mm.
And then I went on to what they call my trade training at Deep Cut. Now, do you boys know anything about Deep Cut?
I do know about Deep Cut, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you were cutting around there with a body armor and helmet on. I got there in 96, and the first, the first incident had happened the year before in 95. So it had a bit of a bad press.
Yeah, just saying that there was a lot of, it was a lot more than bullying.
Oh.
I think there were, I don't want to go into it too much, but yeah, it was horrible, wasn't it?
It was a bit of a toxic culture. So,
yeah.
You know, you've gone from basic training to your trade training, and I literally was like, I just want to be in and out of here. You know, you get that vibe.
Mm.
You get that vibe, don't you, and I've always been a bit of a homing bird, so... Weekends, I was, if we weren't doing anything, I was letting off training coming home. And I'm really lucky to the fact that I've got six best civvy mates that 35 years on, we all made a pact. And two of them joined up after me as well. We all made a pact. They went in different regiments and cap badges. And we all made a pact that we'd stay together. And we have. But I'll go on again later on about keeping older veteran mates and stuff like that. And then that was it then, really. So I went... So I did my trade training, which was a 3-week supply course, and then I went on to do my 6 weeks driver training at Leckham Field, and then I was posted then to my first unit, which was the other side of Warwickshire, Kyneton. So right. I started off in an ammunition depot. And then during my phase two, I saw a guy with a green beret on and a little badge of a dagger, and I thought, what's that about? Anyway, it turned out he was commando trained. I was like, I fancy a bit of that as well. So after 16 months of doing my first unit, which there was all like older guys who'd sort of done 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Some of them were serving the time and they were finishing like their last couple of years before they got out. So I was this young lad saying, you know, well, this is what I want to do.
Yeah,
you know,
eager. No one likes anyone who's eager.
No, they were all like, you know, like, no, what do you mean, PT? What do you mean talking about? And I was like, proper keen, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just want, you know, I want to go and do this commando course. Anyway, I fell in with the right people there, you know, training and that. And then like 16 months later, I put, because with my cap badge, the RLC, you don't stay in one place. So every 3 years, I was getting moved on. But I volunteered to go and serve within commando forces.
Right.
So next minute I know, I put my chit in, and then I got a phone call. Yeah, you know, you've got a posting. And I found myself like getting posted to Commando Logistic Regiment Royal Marines in Devon. And they said,
There's a culture shock.
Oh, by the way, you're going to Norway. I was like, ah, what?
Yeah.
So I literally turned up, and within, you know, weeks of getting there, not even that, I was like packing my kit. And I'd started my life in a what they call an ammunition depot. So we didn't do any sort of field work. It was just pure work. And I thought to myself, after basic training and everything else, I thought, I weren't ready to go to the field army. And that's why I went to a depot, got all this information. I've always been, like, I'm not saying I'm super fit, but I've always been average fit.
Yeah.
Milked everyone for this information, you know, tell me more. And, I went and did my all-arms commando course back in 1998.
Did you change regiments, no. Or was that just part of your?
So what happens is you volunteer to go, so you're part of a commando, so three commando brigade. So everything is Royal Marines, less your attached rank. So we were a squadron within a Royal Marine regiment.
Right.
So basically, we volunteered, and then we did the all arms commando course to earn our green berets. But we still did the trade side of life, as well as a bit of soldiering and stuff.
So did you wear your green beret as standard?
Not when I started, no. So I had to earn that. So when I went through basic training, sorry, not everyone knows this, I'm sort of jumping a gun. So when I went through basic training, you get issued a blue beret, or standard blue beret. So when you go down to CLR, you still wear that until you pass the commando course, and then that's your rite of passage to wear a green beret then, because you've earned it then.
So for most of your service, you were wearing that green beret?
Not all of it, no. So I did 3 years down there, and then I opted to go to Germany then. And I know from a few of your podcasts, a lot of people have served in Germany.
Yeah.
Now, again, and that come from listening to the blokes on my first unit as well. You know, get yourself to Germany, tax-free cars. And I generally, you know, obviously I got promoted as well at Commando Forces. Mm. So going out there as a young Lance Corporal, I nearly got married, but that didn't work. So I went out there on my own. And I say to people, I was living like a footballer, because the wages and the lifestyle is totally different to the UK.
Yeah.
So again, you know, I remember being there like a 21-year-old kid or young man sat in my first unit with my notebook out, and people, and I'd literally planned like the first 5 years of my career in a notebook. I'm like, I'll do that, I'll do that. And the bloke saying, you know, open a German bank, you know, things like open a German bank account. Well, why? Because you'll get so much money put in there and you can live on it because it's dead cheap. And it was. And then I was sending money home then as well. So. But Germany was a really good place. So I'd spent, but a good thing with the commando unit and the reason I went is I knew that I wanted to do something different. There weren't that many commando trained ranks in the RLC. I think there's about 350 thereabouts off the top of my head. Right. And I wanted to be one of them people. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to be one of those that stood out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, don't get me wrong, the course was horrendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrendous.
Listen, if Prince, what was it, Prince Edward couldn't finish it, then it must have been tough.
So, well, I mean, Commando does 30 weeks. Mm. As an attached, as an all-arms commando course, we did 10. So we did the commando phase of it. And it was a really good course. You know, they taught you how to basic soldier, how to admin yourself. But that gave me then the foundations for the rest of my army career.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's great advice what you've just said there. It's like going with the older blokes that are coming the other direction.
Yeah.
You know, they've sort of gone out there, done this, and then thought, oh, I'll do a couple of years back there. But you've soaked up all that knowledge and experience off them guys before you've then used that to move forward, haven't you, mate?
That's what I try. So, honestly, even though like I enjoyed my first unit, because like I used to class them as like old and bored, and say, oh, come on, tell me a story in it. Or when you was on exercise, and I was like sat down this table, you know, just like mesmerized with these blokes. And then set my sights then, obviously, to go commando forces. And then, you know, I cracked that course. I didn't pass first time. It was the second time I passed, which, you know, the whole world ends when you fail something. Okay. But I learned in life. And I watch all them, you know, the SAS, are you tough enough and all that good stuff? Who dares wins? And I've gone to see Ant Middleton and I've seen Jason Fox. And he said, you know, failure is not a thing to be frightened of. But
unless you're a pilot.
Because I'd failed, because it was a major milestone in my army career, going back to the squadron, people thought, you know, I weren't good enough and all that, and you got all that
jealousy. Some
people were.
Yeah.
In my head I was like, look, you know, I didn't pass the 12-mile low carry. They took me off at the 9-mile point. I was absolutely in tears. Like, I'm not frightened, you know, not ashamed of saying.
No.
It was a hard test. I was humping probably about 100-odd pound on my back. And I'm not the biggest bloke in the world. So I looked like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle with a kit, a weapon. And while everyone was striding out, I was shuffling. I was literally shuffling for like...
Yeah, but to do it again, I think is far more pressure. Because you know, if you do it once, you can always say, well, you know, this happened, that happened, didn't get on, you know, clash of personalities. You do it a second time, that it's like, you know, there is more pressure on you to do it, I think. Definitely. Well,
it was the like determination of I want to be one of these blokes. I don't want to be, you know, I want this and I want it. So, you know, again, though, not back in life, put yourself up, dust yourself off and you carry on.
Yeah, but that shows real character, and it's one of the things my dad always taught me. He says, it's not when you're succeeding that I'm proud of you. He says, it's when you fail and pick yourself up and go back again, whatever that is in life. He says, that's when I'm proud of you. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, it's true. And then, again, that sort of brought me out a lot, that did, because I was quite quiet through basic training. I weren't that confident. And then went to my first unit, soaked all that up. Then I went to CLR, and the lads were there like, no, saying about that dress before, Damien. They introduced me to fancy dress, and I was like, oh, I'm in my element here, because these blokes are on my wavelength.
Yeah.
I took everything they taught me, and I took that to my civvy mates when we went out. So if you're going to do it, you have to do it properly. No, you know. There's no half-hearted in fancy dress, you know.
No. Don't play it, mate. You're not playing at fancy dress.
Man, honestly, I've seen these lads, and I've been there myself when we've dressed as. I think one lad was leaving, and there was 30 of us in Blackpool dressed as air hostesses. Do you know what I mean? And I went shopping because my mate had run me up and said, "Yeah," I said, "I'm on this course, but I'll get back." Stayed at my mum's. I'm running around, walked in, getting like underwear and flat shoes and stuff. They said, "We've got a rig for you." You get there and like all the lads are being made up, you know, lipstick on, everything. And 30 of us just went out in Blackpool for this lad's leaving. You know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and I bet you never even got a second glance.
It was the norm. Do you know what I mean? but serving down there was, like I said, it gave me that foundation. I went to Germany. Germany was great. And there were a couple of lads as well that had been posted, like, The thing is, once you get that commando dagger, as it was now, it's now a set of flashes, or if other lads are paratrained, have you heard about, you know, lads going serving with the paras, there's that connection, whether you're paratrained or commando trained, there's always a connection. So when I went down to Germany, I then had to not wear my green beret. I was going back to a normal RLC unit, so it was, you know, my blueberry back on. But I had my commando dagger on my left arm, and I was dead proud of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was other people in other squadrons, and you know, you just tend to click, don't you?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'd probably only been there a couple of months, and me and this lad, he was commando, you know, a paracommando trainer, a lad called Nigel Burke, really good friend of mine, you know, and we used to train, and then like in the squadron, there was always like a function going on. So anyway, they said, "Oh, we're going to reopen the Reggie Bar." So me and my mate buggered off, got changed. I dressed as Coco the Clown, and he turned up as he was in his pink bunny outfit.
There's a thread running through this.
went off, got changed, had a bit of scrap, come back. So the commanding officer there, the Reggie 2 IC is there, the whole regiment in his brand new bar, and me and my mate walking. I'm dressed as Coco the Clown, and he's dressed in his pink bunny outfit. We walked straight to the bar, and everybody just went quiet. we just ordered drinks, and even the commanding officer and that come up, he was like, "Listen, fellas, I need you people like this in my squad like that. This is what we do." Do you know what I mean? Just handed me a beer.
do you know what, mate? A big part of this, of what we're doing as well, is like the culture side of it, you know, and what is culture and everything else. And what you've just explained there about going into a situation where you don't really know what's going on and soaking up the experiences of other people. It's brilliant in terms of life skills, especially because you know what you can do and what you can get away with and stuff like that. But it's that culture aspect of it that I think runs through every single person we've spoken to who's gone into that situation and kind of, you know, they've been in some historical situations across the world, they've probably not even thought about, "Oh yeah, I was there when the wall came down in Germany with my mate." But I'm with my mates, I'm working with my mates, and the wall came down, and you're going, "The Berlin Wall." Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's a proper historical thing, isn't it?
So remember, I said like every 3 years we move. Now I could have had an option to stay on at Devon, but I was always in that mindset of, you don't want to stay there too long.
No.
Because there's other opportunities, isn't there? So that's why I did 3 years in Germany then. So, went out there, you know, I did a Bosnia tour, which at that point, I remember again getting dressed in my service dress ready for Remembrance Day, you know, like it weren't for Remembrance Day, but they were just sorting out who was, what kit fit him. And I remember the sergeant major was top bloke. I got on with him like an house on fire as well. And he was like, typical. He was a Scouser, ex-Kingo, and transferred into the RLC. And he said, "It's typical, isn't it? Commando trained lad and no medals." And there was lads out, and lads and women in Germany, you know, who had a medal because they'd done a tour. And I'd done what, at this point, I'd done what, 7 years? No, sorry, about 5 years, going on to 6 years, and had no medals. So I was like, right, I need to get out, you know, to a normal RLC unit, because the Marines were still living off the Falklands for a long time.
So when would this be, 90? Is this still late 90s?
So I joined in 96. 2000s. So 98, 2001, I was posted to Germany.
Right.
So again, like I said, I'd literally gone back to trade, and I got in with a sergeant major, and I said, "Look, you know, I fancy being a training instructor." So he was a top bloke. He was an ex-instructor himself, and he managed to sort of ping me through what they call the training wing. So I was on attachment. But that was after a Bosnia tour, because I said, "Look, I want to get a medal first. You know, I don't want to go to a training regiment with no medals, and you're there teaching young recruits, and you've got no medals on your chest." So, you know, that's what I did. I sort of set my path then to be a training instructor.
How long were you in Bosnia for?
We just did a 6-month tour, which was, it was a winter tour. It was all right. Because I was in an ammunition squadron. That was the only problem, because I'd started off in ammunition. They said, once you start that in the supply trade, it's very hard to get out of. And I was like, well, you know, I really want to be an instructor. So because I got in with a sergeant major quite well, he pushed me to the training wing. So that's when I went and did, like, my skill at arms course. So I became a weapons instructor. And I did all these courses then to get me to my next posting, which was back as a corporal and as a training instructor back at Purbright, because I wanted to go back to a phase one training establishment. I didn't, after what I'd seen at Deep Cut as a young lad, I was like, I don't fancy Deep Cut. I want to be in the thick of it. And then I got posted to a training regiment then.
Did that, what you saw at Deep Cut, and, you know, I probably know the answer to this, even from speaking to you from a short time. Did that really influence how you treated squaddies who you were training?
Massively. Don't get me wrong, though. We're still in that sort of, again, sort of train hard, fight easy, all that. You know?
100%, yeah. I mean, yeah. No safe space.
No.
None of that. No, I get it, yeah.
I had that attitude of, like, you know, training, select out and all that, because that's what had been ingrained in me as a young lad at 20. But as I got there and I started to see the change from when I went through training, you couldn't do a lot of stuff. Put it this way, even though I was a corporal, you always felt the recruits could do no wrong.
Right.
Do you know what? And no, I don't mean that in a bad way.
You're
like, hang on a minute, I've gone away, I've done all these courses, I've worked my backside off to get my second tape, and this is where I want to be. But we always felt like the recruits could do no wrong.
Football managers and players, it's similar, mate. It's who holds that balance of power. And in some situations, I don't care what you say and what's right and what's wrong, in some situations, that balance of power should be, because you're there to teach them something, or, you know, how to, you're training them to, well, you're training them to do different things, but, you know, ultimately to survive and, you know, do it properly, be professional. And that can't be messed with, can it? You know, it's not, I absolutely get it.
Don't get me wrong, Paul and Damien, right? It was a really satisfying job. Do you know what I mean? I had my own section, so I had 12 people, you know, and I had a range from, some of them were 17, and it was 2004, this 2006 I was there, and the army was still recruiting people up to 32-ish at the time, right. So I had an age range of a lot of people, so it was 7 days a week, but it was really satisfying job, do you know what I mean?
How many of them have you seen since? I mean, all right, no, I'm not asking for a specific number, but how many of those have come back to you and gone, you know what, you were a bastard? But in a nice way, nice way.
I have seen, you know, in fact, one of my units, one of my ex-recruits was there, and she was a corporal in the radio troop. I used to go around when I was a sergeant saying, she was one of my ex-crower. And then she did, you know, they all seemed to do well. It was a good job. It was hard, but really satisfying, if you know, do you know what I mean? You're teaching a recruit syllabus, as it is, you know, and you're full on. So again, I went in all that because I was already qualified to teach weapons. I went and did my drill course so I could teach drill, first aid, you know, but it was full on with them. And, you only got a break when they had a long weekend or passed out, but it was really good.
Digressing a bit, Lee, but I understand. Now, I don't know what it is, so I'll ask you. Claire was telling me that you work with young people in the community now.
I do. So I work in Wellacre School as I'm part of the pastoral team. So this was all new to me as well. But they have a combined cadet force of Royal Navy recruits. So I, after spending 24 years in the military and most of my career, I was spending in the what they call the training world as well as the supply world. I spent a lot of my time in the training world. So I was going to retrain as a teacher when I got home. Again, a bit naive to the fact that, oh, I've taught a military syllabus, so my curriculum's going to be the same, innit? No, clearly not. But this is, you know, this is how you sort of in. Anyway, I approached the school to see if I could get a work placement, because my long-haired general in there was like, if you're really good, Lee, they'll offer you a job. Mm. And I'll come on to resettlement process and all that again later on. So I'd gone in and I said, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind doing a work placement. Anyway, somebody had come home for a week off. I was going on a stag do. I was best man to my best friend. And somebody said, look, the job at Wellacre has come up. The last lad was ex-army and he ran the cadets and put him for a job. So I trundled back, got this application form out to my missus. What does this mean? What? CV, I'm going through the resettlement process. So, you know, anyway, filled it in, sent it in, and I got an interview. And I was like up against, there was me and another ex-army lad who wanted the SSI job, which is the cadet job. And then there was three others who had a degree. I can't spell degree.
Mate.
Right.
Neither can I. Not done me any harm.
I write with a crayon. Do you know what I'm saying? Johnny age five. All right. So, tips up. Let me see. Usual score. And there was five of us. And I remember going in, into my interview, and my missus said, just tell them that you're going to be nervous because you've not done a job interview. I joined the army at 20. It was down at the Army Careers Office in Fountain Street. Mm-hmm. Do this test. Oh, good. Yeah. What do you want to do? I want to do that. There's 15 quid. Get this train ticket on this day off your pot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come back, do your little, you know, you do your oath of allegiance and all that, don't you? Pick what you want to do. Off you go. I'm not doing a job, you know what I mean? I've not had a job interview since I was not even done a proper job interview. So anyway, I sit down, sat there, I've got the principal, the job that was advertised was what they call an assistant head of house, so the pastoral side and the cadets. So I had the principal, the lad I was going to work with as the assistant head of house, an assistant principal.
Yes.
And two, so one guy was from 42 Brigade, who was army, which, because I wear my army uniform, and the other guy was he was part of the air cadets, but he did all the finance and all the, you know, the financial stuff for the cadets. So there's five of them on this panel. So I sits down like sweating, you know what I mean, like oh my god. And the principal, Mel Wicks at the time, said to me, you know, just tell me, she said, you're nervous. I said, nervous. And I had a job interview since I joined the army at 20. So I was that sort of broke the ice. Mm. And then there were five of them on this panel who were all firing stuff at me. But, and this is another thing as well, I've had a language for 24 years. And you've probably heard this from other people, the squaddy language.
Mm.
So she says to me, right, you go in a room, Lee, and you've got 30 kids. And it's an all-boys school working at Wellacre. I don't know if...
We know Wellacre, yeah.
Yeah, great. So you've got... And they're all like 14-year-olds, so they're, you know, year nine. They're going on to year 10, sorry. Yeah, yeah. And they're all being dead rowdy. How would you cope? Well, I said so. Straight away, I said, I don't have a problem gripping the kids. Gripping in a military term means you can get people's attention. So I've just said this out loud, and the principal nearly fell off a chair. Like, and I went, I'd realized what I said because, you know, I was still speaking a squaddy language. So I said, oh, no, I don't mean physically grip them. I mean, I can raise my voice or I can, you know, get those kids' attention so they won't mess about. And luckily, this captain who was part of the cadets well went forward was like, yeah, what you mean is it's a military word for, you know, just getting a kid's attention. I was like, I've only been into interview 2 minutes. I know no way I'm getting this job.
I've threatened to batter the kids.
I'll just put them on the ranges, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, again, I think I was just in the right place, right time, and I managed to get the job. So, yeah. That's where I'm at in a minute.
I wouldn't put yourself down there, mate, because you've been so ambitious, you've learnt off so many people, and then you've gone in there and you've spoke your truth.
Well, you know what I mean? It's funny because he was asking me, one of them asked me a question, I think it was Jezzy's name was. He was like, oh, can you give me an example of multitasking? I said, yeah, of course I am. I said, I'm a sergeant major with the biggest squadron in the regiment of a supply squadron. I've got 200 people on my books. And every day I deal with discipline, I deal with coaching and mentoring, I deal with, you know, whatever else I was doing, I'm making sure, you know, people are doing it, being in the right place, all it, and it was like that. I said, do you want me to go on? He went, no, no, I'll do. I was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think, mate, that character shines through. I at a point, because I've done loads of different interviews. I started working, you know, doing short-term contracts here, there and everywhere in the charity sector. And you know what? I used to go to interviews and I used to have a chat with them eventually because I thought, well, if you don't want to employ me, I don't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That nervousness eventually just goes. If you're not a fit, you're not a fit, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? But don't put yourself down there, brother, because obviously, you know, they've seen that determination, that work ethic, that, do you know all the things that an employer's looking for?
No, I mean, it was nervous, Damon. It was. I mean, Mrs. Bless her. She helped me fill the application form out. And she sat with me because she, you know, before she'd run her own business, because that's what she does now. She runs her own dog boarding business and daycare. She was like, you know, an area manager. So she went through stuff with me.
Yeah, so of course she did. She wanted you out of the house, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I do enjoy it. It took a bit of time, but it is what it is.
Well, just talking through I mean, 24, mate.
I know.
24 years.
And I've wrote them all down, all my postings, 9 postings in 24 years.
Just to give us a potted history, so to speak. And I hate using that phrase, but there's no other way of doing it. Just give us can you just quickly go through those
you want like a bit of an overview, Paul?
Yeah, just tell us where you served. I'm just genuinely interested.
So I started off at Kyneton, like I said, and then I did Commando Logistic Regiment, 6th Regiment in Germany. And then I went to Purbeck as an instructor. And then from there, then I went back to Commando Logistic Regiment, promoted again. And then I went back into the training world. So I did go and do it was called 85 Squadron. And we were posting an older shot, and then we moved to deep cut, which weren't a bad move because deep cut had changed by then. And then I went to 9 Regiment RLC, and then I was promoted then to Staff Sergeant. And I got posted to the 2nd Battalion, the Duke of Lancaster's Regiment, because what was happening were they were putting logistics specialists in a quartermaster's department to work alongside the infantry and work with them within there. Quartermasters and their first line accounting. So that was good because I was living at home. So I was traveling to Blackpool every day. But most of my postings, gents, have all been down the south.
Right.
Like Midlands, down south, Germany. So to get a posting near home, it was great. So I was just getting up early in the morning and traveling to Blackpool. And then, you know what, the M66 likes and all that, innit?
Blackpool is just as dangerous as anywhere else.
Well, that was at Wheaton Barracks, that was.
No, yeah.
That was at Wheaton Barracks. And then I promoted from there and then I took the job as the sergeant major back in my old squadron, back at 9 Reg, and that's where I finished my time.
You know what? It kind of reminds me a lot of speaking to Neil when he's got a really eclectic. You know, when you sit to him, so you've had an eclectic career, mate. I love the fact that it's, you know, you've not, and there's nothing wrong with, say, I've done it in myself in places where you just go, right, okay, I'll just see how it pans out. And next thing you know, you're in your 40s.
Yeah.
Is that real kind of knowing what you wanted and went gone for it. But what seems to underpin it all, I think Damien was kind of going for that before, is the fact that it's a lot of it is supporting and working with other people, trying to put them on the right track
physically
and emotionally. That kind of runs through your whole career, really.
It's not from what I heard from you earlier. You've gone to the older people when you first went in because you know that's where the knowledge, the tips and tricks, sort of stuff. But then as you reach a certain pivot in life where you become the older, you're the wise head that's passing that on to others then. Do you know
your Yoda? This is your Yoda.
You know, like I said, I was in and out of trade. I spent a lot of time in the training wheel, which was great, but I had to go back to supply trade really to get promoted as well, because I'd been promoted through the training world. But we had the biggest cap badge in the British Army, the RLC. So I had to go back to trade, which bothered me a bit because obviously skill fade and all that. But because I'd trained so many, so 85 Squadron, I was training senior NCOs, so sergeants and above.
Right.
And I was a sergeant myself, but so I knew a lot of people from every trade in the RLC.
There were
17 trades in our corps, which you're probably thinking, so your drivers, your chefs, your suppliers, everything down to a port operator, an air dispatch, photographer, ammunition technician. There's one just pioneers, but they got disbanded. So there was a variety of trades within the corps, and I were there in front of all these. So when it come back to trade, and I was like scratching my head, looking at this, supply sort of computer that does everything, you're accounting and this, that, and the other, going, what am I doing? I was ringing my mates up. But this was at two lengths. I was ringing my mates up like, right, I've got this screen here, and what do I do? I've got to brief the QM in 10 minutes. And I don't know what I'm doing.
So
they were like, oh, mate, you helped me with your, when I was on exercise and this, that, and the other, you square me away with my orders and this, that, and the other. I was like, nice one. What do I need to do? So,
A great lesson. That's a great lesson. A, realize that people, just because they're older than you, is tapping at that knowledge. And Damien says it all the time. It's like we've got these veterans now of all ages, but probably the average age that we've spoken to, even on this podcast, has probably been late 60s, early 70s. And the amount of common sense for a start, but practical knowledge that those people have got that would be massively useful within the community in doing positive stuff, and yet it's not tapped.
Oh no, yeah.
And there's a huge wealth of, and that's and Trafford veterans, without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, it comes down to value, doesn't it?
Massively, mate, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just, all the different projects me and Paul do with the charity and other stuff that Paul does and me in the community. It's not about me and it's not about him. It's about finding those people out there that have got incredible value, but nobody's ever given the credit, right?
Yeah.
Now, I know people say that about kids, if you don't praise them and all that, but it happens all through your life. You don't just get to sort of 40, 50 and that, oh, fuck it, you're no good anymore. You're no good to society. That's absolute rubbish. The guys that we've spoke to, and I keep saying it, and me and Claire and Chris have spoke about how we develop the organisation going forward, because I'm helping with that as well.
Good.
And I said you don't give yourself credit that it's not just about Trafford veterans being there for veterans. I said you're providing a service to your local community because you've all got that sense of duty.
Yeah. Well, I'm running a remembrance parade next week at Davy Hume because I helped last year. Me and a young lad from the Army Cadets, Stu put an email out. I went, yeah, I'm calling it. I'll run a parade for you. I've done it with my eyes shut. Do you know what I mean? Tried a meeting with you yesterday. So, yeah, I'm running everything on the 12th. I ran a remembrance parade during COVID because I thought to myself, well, we're clapping for, in the NHS. And I managed to run a remembrance parade in the street here. And I got in touch with a guy who plays the pipes. He put me in touch with a minister who lives on my street. And 2020 and 2021, we were doing services out there. And I was taking the salute and everything for the silent. I had a bugler, I had everything.
Getting shit done, mate. Getting shit done. You know what I mean? It's just, that's pretty much sums up. You do your 24 years.
Yeah.
what what made you, but what made you leave, and then where did that association with Trafford veterans come about?
So I'd done everything I wanted in my career. And the other course I did do, I've not mentioned and I need to mention it, I did an infantry section commander's battle course because I wanted to teach at Sandhurst. That was my next route. So recruits, taught senior NCOs. I wanted to go to Sandhurst, but there was quite a lot of, as I would say, hoops to jump through, but that was a prerequisite. So I got myself on an infantry section commander's battle course, which is, I was a sergeant and they were all corporals in the infantry, another lick out course. But it gave me that tactical knowledge that I wish I'd have had when I was a corporal at Purbeck, because all my training team were infantry back then and I was milking stuff off them, but I didn't have the practice. I knew, because they helped me, but I wanted to go and do this course on my own to understand what they did. It was a beast. So when I was teaching, like I said, the senior NCO course, and I was ringing my mate at two lanks because we were my peer group, and I'd learned that they said, oh yeah, you helped me out with orders, because I'd gone away and I'd done all these courses. I was just lacking a bit of supply knowledge, so they helped me out. So I finished my time, like I said, I went through, finished my time at Ninebridge. So what happened is, during the time, you know when a promotion board's coming out. So as you start going through the ranks, and it never bothered me up until, and it never really bothered me at all, but when I got to a sergeant, you start taking interest in, like, when the promotion board comes out. Up until that hour, it bothered me, and I was like, as long as I was doing what I wanted to do and the jobs I wanted, I weren't really interested in promotion. I know it sounds a bit thingy, but it never entered my head. I knew people who was at my rank as corporal who knew all about promotion boards. I'm like, what are you on about? You know, I want to be a section commander at Purbright. That's all I want to do. So I knew that my next rank I wanted to be. So I'd, in the supply trade, there's not many of us gone down the sergeant major route. And I going down a training route, I wanted to, so we could have gone sergeant major. If it had stayed in trade, there could have been what they call a technical warrant officer within the supply world. So a subject matter expert in the supply world. But I always wanted to go down that sergeant major route. You know, I wanted to be the guy walking around with his pay stick. Well, he'd get off the grass, you know, taking the parades.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That was me.
Like Windsor Davis, you know, ain't half up.
The boy!
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but no, I know what you
mean. Don't get me wrong. I
my uncle was in RSM.
Was he?
So
I was, what do you call it then? So don't get me wrong, the technical warrant officers are great, because I was like, I needed help. Do you know what I mean? As a sergeant major, you work alongside them and everything, and we're great, great people. So I was on exercise in Oman, on exercise safe 303, and I knew the promotion board was coming up. But unfortunately, the reason I had to get out in 2019, I was 8 weeks short of promoting to an RSM.
Right.
So my residual service meant I couldn't promote to my next rank because I was 8 weeks short.
And that couldn't be bridged by anything. That was
policy
just...
So about policy as well. You know,
Jesus Christ.
So at that point, so I'm sat there in Oman,
sweating your bollocks off.
Big logistic exercise. Now, luckily, I was the commanding officer's right-hand man. Even though we had an RSM back in the UK, I was the camp sergeant major. I got on with him really well. You know, we'd train every day, go for a run with him, and I have a good bit of banter. And I said, look, sir, you know, unfortunately, I've not promoted. I said, I'm not the first, I'm not the last. I've got to the rank of sergeant major. I'm absolutely happy. I said, but what I don't want to do is go to a reserve squadron, like a TA regiment now. Can you keep me in a regiment? But what I'll do is, will you put me in the training wing out the way so I can do my resettlement? And he went, yeah, not a problem. So he stuck me in the training wing. And to be honest with you, the guys there just left me alone so I could do my resettlement, because a lot of lads and lasses do the same. You get to the end of the term and they're like, well, I'm not going to bother with this. But you've got to think bigger term, haven't you? So if I don't pull my finger out, I won't get anything out of the resettlement. So that's what I did. I went through that resettlement process of It's called a career transition workshop. You do 3 days and you go through CVs, job interviews, things that are alienated to you, this is as well.
3 days?
3 days. Negotiating salaries. So for someone like me, who's gone up through the ranks, you get to a salary. But then they're talking about, you know, going into a job and, you know, you might get offered this, but you might want that. And I'm like, ah, okay. So it's all alien to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you do that and then they give you a load of money, what's called enhanced learning credits. And you go on a website and you pick what you want. And I decided, because I wanted to go into teaching, I did a level 3 education in training and an MVQ assessor's qual. I've used my learning credits to do a level 5 diploma in coaching and mentoring, which I'm using at the school. And I'm currently doing a level 2, stroke level 3 personal training qual, because I still train now, but I haven't got the knowledge of the anatomy. I can teach a lesson, but a lot of the kids will ask me, oh, what do you do? Do you know what I mean? So I'm doing that in a minute. So that's my last lot of money. Once I've gone through that process, I was lucky because I managed to get a job at the school. So they released me early. So originally I should have been out in January 2020 and I got out in August 2019.
Not that long ago.
No. And then in September, I started at Wellacre. And after the first week of being at Wellacre, I came home to my missus crying, saying it's the worst thing I've ever done. She said, why? I was like, because the kids don't do it, it's old.
Yeah. I can appreciate that. I mean, it sounds like it was a relatively, I mean, maybe you've left stuff out, but a relatively smooth transition from 24 years to Wellacre.
I've been out 4 years, and obviously I became part of Trafford Vets. Me and my missus did. I got to know Claire really well. 6 months ago, started to mentally beat myself up over things. So my missus seemed different. I'm fine. Anyway, I broke down on my mum, and my mum said, you've not processed things, Lee, have you? And I was like, ah, no, I haven't. So I was going to go through the school at first, not thinking Trafford Veterans. Why? I don't know. So my missus like, I'm going to get professional help. I'll pay for it. No, you're not going to pay for it. Anyway, missus proactive like me, picked the phone up. Claire got hold of me, put me in touch with a therapist called Beth Hamilton through PTSD Resolve. Fantastic charity, like what you boys are doing. And now I'm coming out of it. I thought the transition was easy, and it's not. And I'll be open and honest, I was ashamed because, again, you're being indoctrinated by the forces. Don't go sick, it's weak. Don't get any help, it's weak. And I'm not negative about the job. I tell the kids, you know, if you want something out of life, join the forces.
I can see your love for your career. You can see that when you're talking. With the enthusiasm and everything, mate. You can see it.
And everything you've said, Lee, you, of all the people I've spoken to, not just on these interviews, other people, and you've managed your career probably the best of anyone I've ever heard of. I'm going here, I'm going there. But also the resettlement bit and using your, you know, the credits and the education system. So you've managed that, you, not the system.
Yeah, but I have struggled as well.
Best, mate.
Do you know, and this, I'm just now coming out the best of it because I didn't know what was going on. I was upset. I broke down and my mum come home, like, said to me, missus, I'm fine now. I've had a cry, I'm fine. My mum's like, no, you need to go and speak to someone. And I was like, no, I'm fine. And then I thought, no, I best not. Got in touch with the Trafford Veterans. And we've sort of gone here, there and everywhere, but I am an ambassador for Trafford Veterans as well, because Claire, as a WO2, she said, will you take the role on? Yeah, I was like, yeah, of course I will. I'd do anything for the Trafford Vets because they're brilliant. And I've had my last session last Thursday. Well, the last two were family sessions. So I took my missus and said, you know, and she said, look, you're not got PTSD, because I haven't seen, well, PTSD comes in all sorts of forms, doesn't it? But I was lucky enough not to see anything horrific. You don't need medication. You've just struggled with the fact that you're in this new world and you're learning to survive. And I went through this phase, gentlemen. I used to be somebody. And now I feel a nobody. I've gone through, am I shit husband? Am I shit dad? Because I've not always been here. All thoughts went through my head. Got hold of my emotional brain, which I didn't know about. My head's like a cooking pot, crying all the time. What's going on? Went to see Beth. She said, like, what have you done in 4 years? I said, well, I left. My missus decided she wanted to move out because her business was growing. So I've took a bit of a step back. I was in I was in Oman, and my wife said, well, I want to move house. I was like, I've fucking got a job. But I was like, you know, you've supported me. Is this what you want?
Yeah, yeah.
So we moved house, new job, new lifestyle, because I wasn't used to it. Then I decided I'll use some of my learning credits and do my level 5 diploma, which should have took 12 months, but our friend COVID had a thing to that. So that took just over 2.5 years to do. And it was, luckily, the course I went through were all ex-squaddies who run this coaching and mentoring course. So my coaching supervisor was an ex-squaddie. So straight away, you've got that mutual respect.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was going to, the school were dead good, because I said, look, I don't want you to fund it. I just need a couple of days off every 3 weeks. I've got to travel to Oxford. She went, Oxford, what for? To meet my coaching supervisor, doing a one-on-one. COVID hit, ended up doing a Zoom, finishing my time off, and it was the academic side. Oh, no, sorry. I had to do 70 hours of coaching, but I needed the school. But the school was open. Then we were closed. Then it was open.
Yeah.
So I did all that, got me 70 hours in. Then I had to do 3, like, academic sort of write it all up, 5,000 words, then say how I did it. And if I... So it was all this, and it was just, I was just like so busy for 4 years, or coming up to 4 years. That's last May just gone. I sat in a garden, looked at my missus, like, "Was she dead successful? I used to be somebody. Now I feel like nobody. I'm just bog standard, you know, Mr. Ward at school." Do you know what I mean? It has an effect on you, and all of a sudden, my head fell off, gents. And
just going back, I mean, listen, I've always said, it doesn't matter what anybody says, you feel how you feel, and that's what people need to take on board. But it's the leaving a job after 24 years, right? The most stressful thing you can do. Moving house, the most stressful thing you can do. Getting a new career, the most stressful thing you can do. Mate, within the space, throwing a pandemic, you throw all that in and you just think, fucking hell, you know, it's not surprising that, I mean, we're all struggling.
Yeah.
We're all struggling, and it's real, mate. And I don't throw this term around, to be perfectly honest, but I think it's really brave for you to say what you've just said. I really do.
Thank you for it, Lee, because it means a lot to other people hearing this.
Oh, I hope so. I really do, because
it means a lot to me and Paul. And what's it? Because we're trying. I mean, since we set up this charity, and I've always felt that I've been pretty good at talking about things. We do it more and more now.
It's brilliant, mate. Honestly, I couldn't have done it without Trafford Betts and Beth Hamilton. Honestly, I mean, obviously, family, and I opened up to a lot of people, family, friends. Yeah. You know, I was just like, the more I talk about it, the better I am. And now I'm just sort of moving forward. Do you know what I mean? But I said to myself, I thought I was strong-minded, and I am. But at the time, you don't think that.
Yeah.
Because all this shit's going on in your head. And I was like, what is going on? And yeah. I sat down, and I didn't want the new principal to know that I've gone through all this. Anyway, beginning of September, I went back and was like, Julie, have you got a minute? She went, yeah, I'm seeing a therapist. Like, you know, this is what's happened to me. I thought I transitioned really well. I haven't. I said, hardly, nothing to be ashamed of. There's no, what can I do for you? I was like, just, you know, happy with the support. But I just thought, it's time to go and tell people, because there's nothing to be ashamed of. And all my best mates like, you're not the only one. I run for an orienteering club. I let them know, Lee, we're here for you. And it's great. And what you, Paul and Dave, what you do, and Trafford Betts and everything else, you can't top it. But
also, Lee, you're going to be I'm a firm believer that all the things that have happened in my life, right, I had no free will or whatever. I'm not going to go into the spiritual stuff because Paul gets annoyed with me. But everything, I've been trained to be real with other people through all the stuff I've been through myself. Cool. You know, and you working with them kids, especially pastoral teams, which are absolutely essential, you know, at the moment. You going through that and you having that honesty with yourself, never mind anybody else, they'll see that in you. So when they're struggling, they'll be able to talk to you. You know, and that's honestly, mate, that's because people, I've worked in prisons, I've worked with the homeless, I've worked with loads of different, people can't see through me because there's nothing to see through. Do you know what I mean? It's out on the sleeve and this is what you get. And I'll tell them how many times I've fucked up.
And if he doesn't, I will.
Because the army teach you, or any, you know, army, navy, air force, not just talking about, obviously I'm ex-army, no matter what happens, you just crack on. So that's what I've done. So I was like, I got out, got myself a job, we moved house, pandemic, didn't have a, I was like, you know, that's all new, weren't it, to not just me but to everyone. But because I was thinking, if I was still in a job, no matter what happened in the pandemic, we would still crack on. So that's what Beth said to me. She said, you know, anyone else would have gone through what you've just done in 4 years, you've had a mental breakdown, and you just cracked on because of the way you are. She said, she said, I've got a military mindset, and it's only now coming out of this therapy that I've now started to change my mindset of, well, actually, I don't have to do that anymore.
Because but how hard is that, mate? When
it's very hard. It's,
you know what I mean? It's like, you know, like a PT and you get muscle memory.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly the same with your mental health, because you've been taught resilience for 24 years in the army way.
Yeah.
Now that you're in this situation in civvy, that your muscle memory is immediately reacting in a certain way, whereas now you've got to untrain that muscle memory and learn differently. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense, mate?
Yeah, no, no, it's perfect sense, and it's not going to happen overnight. I get that, you know, and the fact that when I opened up to the principal, she was saying, Lee, you don't understand how many kids are looking forward to seeing you now you're back. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
I said, because I've gone from being a sergeant major, walking around a camp, people bracing up to me, morning, sir, you know. But something's obviously sparked something for all this to kick off. Well, it was great. The pastoral team deal with vulnerable kids and behaviour. And everything else, it's took me a bit of time to understand that shouting and screaming doesn't always work.
No, mate, it's underlying. For me, the military has always been about how they, and this is an outsider looking in, and I know people who served and who still serve, but it's always been a sticking plaster to get something done. There's, because, you know, being realistic, you haven't got time.
No,
to do anything else in the situations they're in. And the last thing you want is somebody genuinely taking the time to consider what they've just been told. If what they've just been told goes against every ounce of what you would, a human being would normally do. You know what I mean? It's completely different,
Yeah, you're not taught to question.
Well,
because that delay can lose your life or other people's.
You bang on, and up until getting into school, everything's run on a timetable, innit? So the first week, the lads who I work with in a pastoral team are saying to me, what period are you on now? And I'm like, what are you talking about, period? I work in timings. I literally looked at my timetable on my laptop, and I had to write the timings in my notebook, top left-hand pocket of my notebook. Right, so we start, the form is at 084 till 905. Until I learned this new language. So now I do speak a school language. So Lee, what are you on today? Well, I've got cover period two. I've got cover period three or four. Do you know what I mean? I'm on break duty.
But it is that constant. Nobody, all right, maybe my 15-year-old's different. Nobody knows everything. Do you know? And you are constantly learning, or you should be constantly learning from other people, because I think that's what makes life worth living.
But what David just said there about following orders, it took me a long time to say no at working in this new job. Lee, can you do this? Yeah. Can you do it? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. get the job done. Tick BG next.
That's my attitude, and that's our attitude to what we do. It's not, no, it needs to be done.
Run through a lot of these interviews, and as we're doing more and more of these interviews, and I'll sit down with Chris and Claire, and we'll talk about themes that are coming up. You know, because then we can help refine the projects. You know, and stuff like. I'm listening all the time, taking notes because these themes coming through. But there's one that's come out a few times, Tony, Chris, a few of them said they've come out of the army in very responsible jobs, usually within the background, you know, logistics, IT, all sorts of stuff that's essential. They've gone into a civvy job and then they've not been allowed to do the job properly. And that's caused the friction. So whereas in the army, you've got a clear set of directives. This is your job. You know what it is. And crack on. It's not quite like that within the civvy world, because the budgets control things, or these nuances, or people don't really mean what they're saying.
Or it's too much like hard fucking work, which is
too much red tape and fucking office politics, mate, is the truth, you know. So you can see that different culture. And Tony struggled with his mental health and with his job because he knew there was a job needed doing and they won't let him do it.
Yeah, it's...
And he said he just couldn't compute. It did not work.
Mate, we come... And I'm not saying I'm not guilty of it every now and again, but we come across it all the time, mate. We come across it all the time. Why is this not being done? Well, it's never been done before. Well, you know, this is always the first time. And we've always done it like this. Well, that's why it's not fucking working. You know, it's all that, but it's common. The army for me, the thing that runs through the army for me, and I've said this pretty much in every single episode, is logistics and common sense. And obviously the drinking culture, which comes up in it all as well. But they're the two main threads for me, is logistics and that common sense approach of just getting shit done. And if we can transfer that to most of the problems that we can see around the world, let alone just in Greater Manchester or Trafford, would make a huge difference. And, you know, hopefully we can, the bigger picture is, you know, we can do that. We can do that. And I think people listening to somebody like yourself, and again, each episode will appeal to a different group of people. But like Damien said, and what he said about school, the kids, they'll listen to what you've done and they'll go, oh, that's great. Yeah, I like the idea. Oh, and he did that and he did that. And then to have someone turn around and say, yeah, but I struggled.
Yeah.
That's massive, mate. It's massive.
But what you just said there, Paul, about logistics, and you know you're doing all right in the school because, like, they proper trust me to do stuff and that. They'll say, oh, they're getting their HPV jabs. Get Lee Ward on the job because they'll know I get the kids being an ex-loggy in the right place at the right time, and I get them back. And it's same with photographs, get Lee Ward on it because I'm there. Like, sort your ties out, lads. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just little attention to detail stuff, that, you know, button your jacket, sort your ties out, and you're getting your photograph. But the jabs always come to me. Make sure he's not on any cover lessons. I need him because and he won't give anyone else the job.
Yeah, but that's great. Everyone's got the strengths, haven't they, mate? Everyone's got
the strengths. It's nice, you know. It's nice when people are saying that to you. It's like, yeah, I'll just do that. You know, like, there's no skin off my nose. Just right, shout your name out. Get outside, lads. What's happening? Getting jabbed. Just get outside. You know, I need to be. You've only got 20 minutes, so I've trumped them all up there. Right, keep up.
Yeah, but there's worse things that people can say about you. You know that Lee Ward. You know what? Do you know him? He gets things done. It can be a lot worse.
Like I said, it took me a long time to say no. What do you mean? No, like the kids, no, I'm not doing that. Well, yeah, you are. That's not in my vocabulary, that fellas. And just little things like detentions when they turn up 10 minutes late because he's time wasting. Not when I'm on it. Yeah, you owe me 10 minutes. Well, I finish at 25 past. Well, you turned up at 10 past 3 and it's at 3 o'clock till 25 past, and you've turned up, and there's no way you're doing 15 minutes and then think you're popping smoke right flanking, my friend. Sit down there, you owe me 10 minutes, and one day you'll thank me.
But listen, mate, it's been It has been an absolute joy to speak to you this afternoon. Thank you. It really has. Oh, yeah, don't let him really off your,
mate. It was 10 minutes, so he'll have to stay for
another. Yeah, you owe me 10 minutes now, Paul.
Yeah, all right.
And then thank me one day.
No, honestly, mate, it's been a real pleasure to speak
Lee,
to you.
I'm just glad, honest, I'm really glad that there's someone like you working on a pastoral team.
Thank you very much.
Because there's a lot of people within social services, within them kind of roles, and they're not real people. You know, you can bend over too far backwards for kids that are going through troubles, and they don't need that. They need somebody that can actually is real. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Well, thanks for having me, gents.
Great to hear you there, mate. If you ever need any help off us, if there's any project we can help with, don't hesitate to give us a shout, brother.
Gentlemen, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. I just feel like this time's just gone dead quick, and I've got everything wrote down on my notebook. Follow it, Lee, and it's just gone all over the show.
So yeah, but that's the way everyone hates us.
I've gone off on a tangent and
everyone that's done these interviews has said to me, I've been to the hub quite a few times. We both went to the breakfast. It was great seeing everybody. They all came over to us, chatting away, and wanting to tell us more stories.
Yeah.
And we forgot this one, we forgot that one. It's created a real buzz with all the guys. Do you know what I mean?
I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and then Claire said, you want to do one? I was like, yeah, of course. Well, that's me. I love talking about myself, as my wife says, you know. It's all about you, Lee, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
but
it is.
I don't always get to the breakfast. But I'll always check in with Claire and Chris. I did have the kids down at the last breakfast. I took them from where I went there, but one of my instructors took them. So,
we were there at that, weren't we? At Flixstone.
The Trafalgar one. So, I said when I can get, because 9 times out of 10, the breakfast is when I'm normally going on an orienteering course somewhere. So, I don't.
Do you know what? The kids were on the door. The kids were on the door signing people in, and I came in. Yeah, oh, mate, nearly kicked off. I came in. He went, who are you? And I went, Paul, just Mank Spirit, just here. She said, are you friend or family? Are you a veteran or are you family? So I said, neither. So it was like, you're not coming in.
But you know why now? You know
who's great. Max and Paddy at the Phoenix Club.
I was like, I am coming in. Yeah, they were
waited till it was busy and walked round, shuffled round behind.
Oh dear. Anyway, listen, mate.
I tell you what, lads, I'd love to go for a drink with you.
Oh, mate. Well,
yeah, honestly,
we'll definitely go. I mean, I don't booze anymore, but I'm still
fun. I've got no one to drink with anymore. Like, everyone's giving in around, mate.
The you two boys are absolutely top dog fellas. Honestly, good lads.
Thanks, mate.
Appreciate what you do as well. Because I've listened to a few of your podcasts, so yeah, you know, you dig out blind, and it's good, like you said, getting stuff out there, men.
I'd love to do more with the first festival we had, Wellacre. We had a lad, Joe, that was there that did some stuff. He was a top lad, and Wellacre shared it, and he got involved. And you could tell then they were very good in terms of community stuff and that. But it would be good for us to do more with Wellacre. I'd love to do that. Whatever we can, whatever we can get our heads together and do, mate, I'd love to.
I'll speak to people in the hub, as they call it, inclusion for mental well-being and that. I'll say, look, I've done a podcast for Trafford Vets via you. You know,
we've done pastoral work with the pastoral team at Pendlebury asked us to go and
Pendleton.
Do some sessions. Pendleton,
yeah.
And that was amazing. They're a real good bunch of young people.
We'll let them
come up with ideas, we'll let them, and then we just sort of facilitate.
Stole all the best ones.
And took the credit for it and things like that, yeah. No,
I'm not. You've got your email and stuff, just drop us anything and I'll tap into the right people for you, because I want to get Claire in to do a guest speaking to my cadets about, you know.
Brilliant, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that'd be good. And obviously, with my pastoral team, or what you do with you know, your charities, it'd be great.
Brilliant. All right, mate. Well, we'll definitely do that. Definitely.
So, yeah, just send us some
stuff. I know
stuff
it's been a lot of messing about getting you on, but I'm glad.
No, no, I
enjoyed this afternoon, mate.
But honestly, mate, you don't. Where is it going in my junk mail? And then, can you do this tomorrow? I'm like, I've read it. And I'm like, oh, and that's why I like, touch me somewhere. I hate that. Do you know what I mean? Saying I'll do something and then, you know, I get things, technology and all that. But I'm glad, obviously, I've got, you know, your phone number now, Damo, and stuff.
No worries, so, mate. If you ever need anything, is a shout.
Yeah, 100%. Well,
both of you, mate. Honestly, I've really enjoyed this afternoon. I was a bit nervous to come on. I was like, "Oh, I don't know what you're gonna do," but you've just like, I've just had a really good buzz today.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate that.
No, appreciate honestly.
That. I've got to go and have a lie down
does
now.
Work. The organized chaos does work.
Yeah, it does. It does, mate. Yeah. It does. Right, fellas, I'll let you go.
All right.
Thanks
see you later,
for having
pal.
Me. I really appreciate you having me.
I'll look forward to seeing you at one of the Trafford Vets things. Mate.
Yeah, yeah. I'll keep in touch. Definitely.
All right. You take care, brother.
Keep up the good work, lads, because you sound.
Cheers, mate.
See you, mate.
Cheers, mate. See you in a bit.
Cheers,
see you
later. Thanks for listening to that Great Mank Pod. Please do us a massive favour and subscribe to this podcast. And if you can, leave us a review on iTunes. Both are a massive help, enabling us to promote the people and the great causes we champion to a much bigger audience. If you want to get in touch, give us a follow on Twitter at GreatMankPod and drop us a DM. Cheers.
You're listening to That Great Mank Pod, Greater Manchester's community podcast. Top one, I guess.